Hello and welcome to Radio Book Club on Big Cabbage Radio 89.5. I'm Judy Getty and I'll be hosting the show today as we discuss The Longest Road, Overland Search of America from Key West to the Arctic Ocean by Philip Caputo. My guests are Franny and Bruce Main. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
So before we get started, I wanted to remind our listeners that we are pre-recording today's show, so when it's aired on June 29th, there will not be any call-ins. So the book is about a journey that Caputo decides to take to examine what holds America together. He feels that he has witnessed a tearing in the fabric of our country, and yet we are all Americans. At an early point, he decides to invite his wife along on this 12,000-mile journey. And that brings me to our guests. So the two of you have traveled many miles together. What were your thoughts when you looked at what this husband and wife team were going to take off on?
Well, the book starts out where it's his idea and he is going to go it alone, I think at that point with his dogs. And when he decided to include his wife, I frankly was relieved that he would have her along.
Well, and it sounded like at first the only reason why he was having her along was to help with the dogs.
Dog wrangler, I think. Yes, he gave her that title.
Because
yes.
One of the dogs was elderly, but I could have easily left the dogs behind and just enjoyed taking my wife along.
Very kind of you, Bruce. So why did you say relieved?
Well, because, so just a brief bit of what Bruce and I do, we are retired and we have a RV that we drove out of state several years ago now, and we keep it down in the States and we get back to it as often as we can and do another portion of the country. And then when we're done with that, we put it in storage and we come back and we get back to it as soon as we can again. And we have so much fun. And I think it is because it's the two of us. And it's something I would not want to do alone.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine doing that alone. I kind of bore myself. But it's more fun to share that. And like when Franny and I are traveling, it's not like we're doing everything together. She might be on the couch reading a book and I'm sitting at the table playing with my computer, but just having a companion along to share. And so I'm not just looking for what I want to look for. She's got things that she wants to look for, and it kind of broadens the whole
experience. Yeah. So what's the longest trip the two of you have ever taken together?
I think in terms of
East Coast
in the RV, and I think were we out 6 or 7 weeks?
We were out for, yeah, I think maybe almost 2 months.
And that was probably a good amount for us. well, because we have five boys and we have other things going on, and so you want to get kind of back to those things.
Right. So I can't remember, Philip and Leslie in the book, I think they're traveling for several months because obviously they're taking their time. So that was another thing I had to think about, because typically when I'm doing this kind of trip, especially the Elkan trip, I'm thinking, get there. And so, of course, their whole thing is this, you know, asking a question and doing this exploration. So it's not just get there. I mean, they're taking their time.
Yeah, and I did admire that about them. I, you know, that they even took the time to, I think they did a kayak trip, and they made a point of really kind of stopping at one point to do some disaster relief type of things. And so I think that goes back to Bruce and I together, too. I am a little bit more stop and smell the roses, and Bruce is a little more get there. So that helps when you have that balance, I think.
Well, and when we first got started, one of our boys and his wife bought us a pass for the national parks. And every year they renew that for us. And it makes it easier that if you see Brown versus Board of Education, which is just one little building, you don't mind stopping and going in because it doesn't cost you $20 each time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, while this guy's quest was, you know, the longest road, you know, I mean, he had certain things that he was after. We also have certain things that we're after. And I think you do have to kind of narrow your scope, because otherwise there's just way too much out there to see.
And that's why I was wondering, do any of your trips have like a theme, like they have a theme?
Most of them do. There's been a couple different things. One is that my family, I was raised in the Air Force, and we lived at different bases around the country, and none of my family has ever been back to those bases. So we did that a couple years ago. We went back to Texas, went back to Maine, to places that my family hasn't been since 1970, and sent pictures back, and you know, it was pretty
kind
amazing.
Kind of a nostalgic trip.
Yeah, it really was.
And then I'm always chasing the national properties. They're always well run. They're always very educational, interesting. That you know, all the not just the parks, but all the memorial historic sites. All of them. I just love to stop at all those. And I have the little national park. What do you call it?
Passport,
and you get them stamped, you know, and that's just kind of what I like to chase.
And I collect pins from a certain cafe, and we find those all over the states, and I search those out.
Yeah.
So
kind of have like your little missions, your little checklists.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Bruce, you said something about you would have left the dogs at home. Soon as they, you know, I'm not a dog person. I don't think you guys are dog people. So, I mean, somebody who's a dog person might understand. But to read this and think about what a hassle those two dogs were, I just don't understand.
Well, and we don't have anything against animals, but we don't have any pets.
Right.
But we just completed a trip down the Alcan. And that's when we didn't read this book. We listened to it while we were driving.
I love that idea. I love that you guys are on the road listening to it.
When we first started traveling, Franny suggested that we get books on disc. And I said, there's no way I'm listening to a book while I'm driving. And we have listened to, I don't know how many books over the last 6 years while we were driving.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one that we did. But that was a 5.5-day trip to Las Vegas. So it wasn't a... Stop and Smell the Roses.
Right.
But they brought two cats along.
Mm.
And these are cat people.
Our son and his
wife. And they had cats in the car. And then every night we had to find a pet-friendly place to stay.
And they had to bring their whole...
it's not easy.
All
it was a lot of hassle.
Inside. It was, and you know, I understand it because they were actually, they're moving there.
Right.
So they had to bring their pets along.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I would put up with it. And we have seen some really crazy things at the RV parks and so forth that we stay. The things that people are doing just to have their pets along and driving down the road with them on their lap and on their dashboard.
So sometimes it doesn't seem safe. But the other thing that bothered me too, I guess, was sometimes when they'd be out in nature and his dogs were like hunting dogs. And I thought they almost seem like a threat. In some natural settings to the wildlife that was there.
I kind of agree with you in that I thought, you know, some people misinterpret when we say we don't have pets as we hate animals.
Right.
We don't. We're out there actually looking for animals. And I don't know that I wonder the same thing. Would that enhance that or would that?
Well, those were bird dogs and they're trained to pick up the scent and find those birds and not necessarily attack them, but point them out. But they did have a habit of chasing animals.
Right, right.
So that would be a hassle.
Yeah. And there was just many hassles, like we said. I mean, the truck leaked, and so they'd have to bring him into their little trailer. And
well, and I think that a lot of times I thought when I was reading this adventure that I thought was, you know, great that they did that. I think... in order to make it a little more interesting for themselves, they did it in ways that created more of a hassle than maybe I'd be willing to put up with. I don't think I would have taken that particular vehicle.
Okay, so let's talk about the vehicle. So they do get, I mean, it sounded like a pretty good sized truck, but then they decide that for their living space, they're going to get an Airstream.
An old Airstream.
Yes, and that was another thing too, because I mean, I can see romanticizing an Airstream. They are kind of a, you know, quintessential American kind of traveling icon. But yes, they get an old one and it just sounds like it's got all kinds of troubles.
Right from the beginning.
Yes.
Almost to where I thought, okay, now's your time to change your mind on that.
Go trade in for a new fifth wheeler.
Well, and it wasn't even theirs. They were borrowing.
Yes, that was different too.
You know, so then you have to worry about, am I going to damage somebody else's property? And it's their little dream property because it's an icon.
And it's restored or whatever. Yeah. That they actually renovate those things.
And there is a big following of Airstream people. They used to have, I remember as a kid, that they would have caravans that came up here and they would park over by Lions Park in Mountain View. And they would all be Airstreams.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You'd pass them. Like a very select club.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, so, I didn't go online and look at, this model and what it looked like inside, but it sounded very tiny. I mean, they didn't even have like a double bed together. They kind of had to sleep in two separate areas. There's problems with the gas alarm always going off. And then
they'd...
The holding tank.
Yeah. As a guy who has a camper, you can probably relate to a lot of these problems. Yes. Going, why are you putting up with that?
The leak in the back of that truck. It's not like they were in a big hurry. I would have stopped somewhere and got that fixed.
Well, and I kept thinking to myself, okay, it is a nice, romantic, fun idea, but didn't they stop at hotels sometimes just to get kind of away from that?
They did.
Yeah. So, I would have made a different choice, but it added to the interesting reading, listening to of the book.
And I think Philip is very clear about himself. He's not very mechanically minded. So he had to have kind of like all these trainings or some hands-on practice on what to do with the camper and how to back it up. I mean, that sounded like a nightmare too. How to park it, how to, run the jack, all those sort of things that you need to know. So he doesn't sound like a guy who could fix things.
It didn't. So, again, I admired him for taking on the project because, we've done a lot of traveling through the States. But one of my things on my list is that the last part of his trip, the Dalton Highway, which I am afraid to take even a normal, very, sturdy vehicle on.
You're not taking one of my cars.
No, let alone an Airstream. I mean, to think that you're not a handy person and you're going to drag that thing up that's an undertaking.
That's a gutsy kind of thing.
It is.
Well, okay, and we should say that Caputo is a journalist. He's a Vietnam vet. So, I mean, this is a guy who's put himself into some risky situation. So I think he believes that he can handle himself when things are tough and has gotten himself out of scrapes, probably far worse than anything that, they happened upon on this journey. But
right, and that's probably part of my admiration.
When was this, 2011 or 2012 that he traveled?
The book was published in 12, so probably shortly before that.
So the highway is, the Alcan itself is a much better highway than it used to be. My first trip on the Alcan was in 1964, and this is almost like a freeway now, and it's still pretty rough. But pulling a trailer, pulling a trailer is not my idea of fun. When we go, we have a motorhome.
Mm-hmm.
And there's pros and cons, but
there's a lot more help along the way now.
Yeah. Well, and just a brief thing about us listening to the book. So we're on this 5.5-day mad dash for Vegas, transplanting our kids. Where it's at three vehicles, two of them are pulling U-Hauls. And we decided to listen to this book along the way. And the other, I provided each of the other vehicles with the audio book too. Because I wanted them to listen to it, and I thought we could have book clubs in the evenings and maybe get some help for this show.
And we had walkie-talkies.
Yeah, we had walkie-talkies. But, of course, we're traveling the opposite direction of this group, right? So everybody in their own vehicle, as they're listening to the book, some didn't even start listening to it right away. Bruce and I did, but the others, you could tell they weren't even that interested, but kind of as a favor to me, they might start listening to it. Then they got very interested in it.
Funny.
And they would report, done with disc two, done with disc three. And we did have discussions. And at breakfast in the morning, they would show me on their phone the research they had done. They had found this guy and his wife and a picture of the vehicle and the dog. So they did get into it. Uh-huh. And I was happy for that because they're not even really what I would call readers. So that was fun for me to get them engaged in it. So we're traveling the opposite direction as Philip and Leslie are, and each of us pass them on the road at different times. And what I mean by pass them on the road is, as they're describing their travels up north, and we're going south, we passed.
Yeah.
We passed.
But each car at a different time.
At a different time.
Yeah.
That was very fun. It added to the whole thing. And one really fun part about it was that there were, he mentions he, Philip, is loves cinnamon rolls. You remember that part?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So he describes the five best cinnamon roll places. And number one on his list is Teslin
or something like that.
Mile 357.5 on the Alcan. So I write it down right away. I mark my mile post, big circle. We're going to stop. Have the best cinnamon roll in the world. And I told them.
In the cosmos.
In the cosmos. Whoa. Yeah. And so we had stopped at Watson Lake, gone to the visitor center, got a list of the next stops for the next 100 miles or whatever, and that's listed on there, open till 8. Well, that day we had a couple of little mishaps and took a little extra time doing things. Well, we're racing to get a cinnamon roll before 8 o'clock, and we start seeing signs for the best cinnamon rolls in the cosmos, mile or two out. Boy, we're just so ready. And we pull up. It's 10 after 7, closed. We're in a hurry to get to Vegas, and I'm almost to the point where I want to tell the group, we're staying here.
And we're spending the night.
And we're so disappointed. And it not only is it closed, but it has a big sign out front in front of the door. We are closed. No amount of standing out there screaming and banging on the door is going to get us to open.
Wow.
So now I don't know if that's because of this book.
Or their darn signs.
Or their cinnamon rolls.
Yeah.
Well, and it was also a campground.
Right.
And somebody, there was motion inside there.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, oh, okay. And this guy walks out, and I thought, oh, you know, maybe he'll sell us a cinnamon bun.
Well,
and
we tell him we're here because of the book.
He just shut the door and said, they're closed.
Yeah.
They might have been out.
Maybe. We missed out on that. Big disappointment.
Disappointing.
Yeah.
So you are listening to Radio Book Club on Radio Free Palmer. We're talking about The Longest Road by Philip Caputo. So early on, he has one of those quotes that I think about a lot, and that's that things you do never cause as much regret as the things you don't. So that kind of is his reasoning for even taking this trip, because he'd been thinking about it since the 90s. So he, you know, had been something he'd been thinking about for well over 10, 12 years. And so, you know, the decision to do this, even though now he's 70 years old. And so I do you have any thoughts on that? Things you do never cause as much regret as the things you don't.
Well, I know that my parents, my mom and dad, are still living here in Anchorage. And they wanted to buy a camper and hit the road. And my dad, I guess my dad wanted to do it too, but my mom really wanted to do it. And my dad is pretty tight with his money, and he just kept putting it off. And then now we're traveling, and they're too, they won't even fly anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they regret the fact that they just never took the time to do that. They had the time, and they kind of live vicariously through our trips now.
Yeah, yeah.
But in general, I think I do kind of agree with that statement. And it made me think a little more about the things that I have. You know, in the back of your mind, you have all these things you still want to do. And, you know, then you say, oh, he was 70. And, boy, that's a little late. And then I started thinking about the fact that, wait a minute, I'm 60. Yeah. That's not that different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I'm definitely starting to think more about, well, I got to get busy.
Yeah.
A little busier.
There's a lot on my list yet.
Yeah.
So what about, you know, you mentioned that you've taken some long trips and you are in a motorhome, so that just puts you in close proximity. And I know the two of you for a long time, so I know that you get along well. But do you think that there's such a thing as too much time together and too much? I mean, you even just being with anybody that long a time, you're going to rub each other the wrong way sometimes. And in the book, they do.
They do. They do.
They do. And it happens to us. And almost guaranteed, if there's a crossword, it's because of me. Franny just doesn't engage, and she doesn't argue. And sometimes I get frustrated. A lot of times it might be in hectic traffic, and I need to know a direction, and I get snappish. But other than that, you know, we're comfortable with each other. So,
yeah, we
can spend too much time with somebody, but.
And, you know, those little RVs are small, but the outdoors is huge. And I'm more likely to go for a walk or to go maybe on a little hike and, you know, talk Bruce into going with me a lot of times or maybe not. And so, you know, you have ways to kind of get away from each other.
Like the catfish hole there in Kansas City.
Yeah. Just Bruce out there smoking a cigar and catching catfish and just
the small moments of joy.
That's right.
Yes.
It's true. And they're all over the country.
Uh-huh.
And so it's not really been a problem. I'm not ready to go what a lot of people we run into call full timers. And they're out there all.
Yeah, that's how they live.
That's how they live. Yeah. I don't think that's me.
Well, and part of the joy of ours is that we always look forward to going, and we're never quite ready to come back. So it doesn't get old for mm-hmm. us, and we see new places. We'll drive from Denver to Kansas City, and we'll put it in storage and fly home. And then the next time we'll start in Kansas City and go to Nashville or whatever. So we keep them fairly short. I think the shortest one has been 2 weeks. The longest one was almost 2 months, but usually 3 or 4 weeks.
So it's always fresh because you're looking forward to it.
Yeah. Gives you a little time to get it ready, see the area, hit the road, and then get it ready at the other end because there's things that you have to do to prepare it for storage.
So Philip and Leslie's biggest fight that I remember is where he starts down this road. And like we've talked about, the truck pulling this Airstream trailer. You're pulling a trailer. And why he drives down roads where he doesn't know if he's going to be able to get out is, you know, probably just part of the adventure, right? So he drives down this road and they've been told there's bears in the area. And he's thinking, oh, my gosh, I better turn around now or something or why don't you walk ahead and see if the road is going to take me out of here? Do you remember this part?
I do.
I think she volunteered to walk ahead.
Okay, so she says, yeah, okay. And he's supposed to wait there or something. So she leaves, even though they've been told there's bears in the area. And then he decides he can get out of there. So he gets himself off this road and then drives down and finds her. And she is so angry. Rightfully so,
right.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. And scared, angry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so that's what he records as kind of the biggest fight. But, you know, I mean, and, you know, if they got along pretty much for the rest of the time, that's pretty darn good.
That is pretty good. That is pretty good. You know, we on this particular trip had one day near Watson Lake, probably the missed cinnamon roll day, seen more bears than we have seen in our whole life living in Alaska.
We lost count.
Yeah. We stopped stopping.
Yeah.
You know, we're just flying by mothers with three cubs. There are so many bears out there. And then we had our only mishap of the trip, a flat tire on one of the vehicles. And we had to wait for some time. And the vehicles kind of stopped maybe half a mile apart. So at one point I thought, you know, I'm just going to walk from the vehicle I'm in to the one that was having the problem. And I get about halfway between it. And I remember, wait a minute, you know what? I have seen more bears today than I have in my whole life. What am I doing out here?
Yeah.
So I kind of understand that fear that she's having. And if she's, so I could understand that. And
she's walking through the trees going, hey, bear, hey, bear.
Well, and, you know, talking about going down roads that you may not be able to get back out of. Our motorhome is 30 feet long. And we were in Utah. Searching for septarian geodes.
And another mission.
Yes.
And I started down this dirt road, which turned into a rut, which turned into less than that. And I think that was the closest Franny got to being angry with me. Mm-hmm. How are you going to get out of here?
How are we going to get out of here?
Just leave it to me.
And we had bicycles at that point hooked on. And I said, you know, can't we at least just stop, get on our bikes and go searching, you know, further on bikes. And
there was that one little ditch that we had to go through that I had to take the hitch off the back because it was dragging. That's when she talked me into, okay, we'll ride the bikes the rest of the way and then ride back. But.
And, you know, you get out of all your scrapes, right?
You're here.
So far.
The other thing I just want to add to is that when he decides to name the truck and trailer, and he names the truck Greyhawk and the trailer Nomadica. I mean, it just sounds so so epic. And then she says, no, they're Fred and Ethel, which probably was a better description of these two
more
particular.
Practical.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cute.
Yep. And so throughout the book, then the trailer is referred to as Ethel and Ethel's problems. But yeah, it was, I think, really appropriate. So the big question that, you know, this is part of the reason why he writes this book, that, you know, he's been all over the United States and he thinks about how different in some ways locations are and people are. And yet there's something that binds us all together as Americans. So he's kind of searching for this answer is, you know, what holds us together. So as he goes through the book, he stops and asks people this question. And I like the first answer that I recorded was somebody said, no idea, whatever. And then, you know, and then he gets some different answers and, you know, feel free to give some examples. But do you think he answers that question? What binds us together?
I thought it was kind of a hokey question in the first place. You know, a poor premise, but, you know, something to build his book around. Mm-hmm. But I do think he kind of amassed, it's not just one thing that holds us together. It's a whole combination of things, and that's what the United States is made out of, is people from all over the world that have come together, and what is it, e pluribus unum, you know, the many is one.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably not the correct translation, but
but I get what you're saying, yeah.
I also kind of thought it was a little bit of a contrived question, maybe, you know, you think, well, you've got, if you're going to do this trip and you're going to, you know, you have the longest road, that's certainly one angle. Then you have the interesting vehicle. And then also you're in search of some answer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I understood him kind of wanting to have that. Here was one problem, and you didn't have this problem, Judy, because you read it, but we listened to it and he gave a lot of these people he talked to, the narrator did, or the reader, accents, and they weren't great, and they were a little bit hokey, and it made it hard to kind of take some of the things that people were saying serious, I thought.
Okay.
It was a little bit comical, almost.
Oh, so like they're making fun of some local or regionalism? Or
No, I don't think that was the intent. I think the intent, of course, was to show that they were people from different areas, but... It lost something.
So in the audio, was the narrator doing the different voices?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it was all one voice, but he took on different
accents.
And would drop and would start off with them and then maybe drop them and then kind of come back to them. And that detracted from, in my mind, the kind of the seriousness of the question, maybe.
Okay. And I wasn't sure some, you know, in the book, and you probably picked this up too, listening to it, but, He does dialogue, so I didn't know if he was recording these and then, you know, transcribed them verbatim, or if he just...
It didn't come across that way.
You mean that they were the actual words?
Well, it didn't seem like it was quotes that
he was
using.
Know,
he just kind of remembered...
The conversation.
Gist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is kind of how it came across. I was more interested... in hearing descriptions of the places he went to and the scenery and the, you know, and some of the descriptions of the people than maybe I was in the answers that people were giving him. We, you know, from staying in a whole lot of RV parks and campgrounds and so forth, we, you know, we take a walk and we'll start to have conversations with people. And you do meet a whole lot of different kinds of people that are on doing totally different things, total different, come from total different walks of life, I guess I want to say. And that is a very interesting part of the traveling around.
Just hold that thought. We are talking about The Longest Road by Philip Caputo. This is Radio Book Club on Radio Free Palmer. So, yeah, I was noticing that, too. And so when he would ask the big question, I almost thought he's like, oh, that's right. I'm supposed to be writing this book. And I'm supposed to be finding out about this, because he would get into all kinds of conversations with really interesting people. And, you know, in your travels and since you approach people, and I know I've done this, too, sometimes I just think, oh, this was so interesting. I'm so glad I came up to these people and started this conversation. Other times I thought, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into?
You right. are so right. And I don't know if you're thinking of this, Bruce, but the one time we started a conversation with some people and they sat down at our campfire and they would not leave. And I had to find, I kept saying, well, I'm going to go in and cook
You're making all the
now.
Social yeah cues.
And they said, oh yeah, just go on in and grab a sandwich. We'll be right out here. Remember, got
yeah.
dark.
Yep.
We finally had to go in and go to bed. And, but other times, so interesting. And the people you meet are so nice and willing to help each other a lot. You know, you see that if you're having a problem, everybody's got, you know, willing to pitch in.
We stumbled upon a big barbecue cookout in Kansas City. It was a competition. And we didn't know when we booked ahead of time, booked 3 or 4 days at this campground. This place filled up with big rigs and small rigs and all different kinds of barbecue rigs. And they had a contest right around us, and talking to some of those people about their the way they cooked their meats. And, you know, they had to have 4 different kinds of meats that they prepared. And that was just amazing to
yeah.
me.
Fascinating.
A lot of fun. And you just, you stumble into those kinds of situations. And that's, of course, a lot of the fun of being out there. But I had to be reminded that I am, like you say, Judy, somebody who will approach people. And I will ask people questions. I think people like to talk about themselves. And I mm-hmm. like to know about people. And once in a while, I think Bruce gets so almost embarrassed at it that he will say to people, you'll have to excuse her. She's writing a book.
So that really
reminded me of it a lot.
Well, I like to talk to people also, but you know, there's a limit.
A different limit for you. No, your story, the one that I can recall where I thought, oh, why did I even start? We were getting out of our vehicles in a parking lot, my oldest daughter and I, and we were going to do some hiking in Nevada. And this guy gets out of his. And so I'm already talking. Oh, we're going to hike up this. And are you know, you want to come along? Well, that is a dumb thing to say. Oh, okay. So this guy was not prepared for a hike. He didn't have water. I don't know why he would have said yes. So all I could think is this guy's going to try to kill my daughter and I. And and my daughter was in basic training in the Army. And I thought, I'm sure she can take him. There's 2 of us. I'm sure we can take him. And I just detracted from the joy of the hike. But I thought, this is a good lesson for me to just not be blurting out, you should come along. What are you doing?
I'm surprised because I like to talk to people, but I don't know that I would invite them on my hike first.
You
thing
had
out.
People at your campfire.
Yeah, well, and Franny loves to talk on her hikes. Her and her sister wonder why we never find any wildlife when we're out hiking. It's because you're constantly talking. And they were going up Bird Ridge, and they heard somebody coming behind them talking, calling his dog and whistling. And so when he caught up to him, they said, where's your dog? And he said, well, I don't have a dog. I just do this because of the bears.
Oh.
Make noise. Mm-hmm. So he decided to walk with them for a while. And he had enough of their constant chatter and decided, I'm just going to go on ahead.
Yeah, and call my pretend dog.
Yeah, after a few miles, he said, well, I'm going to go on ahead. And we said, oh,
me and my dog are going to travel ahead.
He said, you guys are too much. So, yeah.
The other thing about traveling is, you know, and he talks about this, is when you tell people what you're doing, this is the journey we're on, this is what we're trying to accomplish, and people will say things like, oh, you know, I wish I could come with you, or I wish I was doing what you want to do. And, you know, I think you find both kinds of people that seem really just satisfied and happy to be right where they're at. They have no desire to move, no desire to go anywhere, see anything. And those people say, oh, I wish I was going with you.
Yes, and you do have those 2 distinct types of people, and I don't understand the former, I guess. But sometimes I think, and maybe I'm all wrong about this, sometimes I think it's a little bit of a fear issue. We like to also travel other ways, and my family's from Europe, and we go to Europe, and I've had people say, oh, I'm afraid to go to a foreign country, and it's too bad if those things hold you back, because I think there's just a lot of great things to experience out there, and I would hate to miss it.
Well, if it's fear, but I think some people, it's almost like they don't have a desire, that they really feel like their life is just enough with what they get. And I'm thinking about the one place he went that I think was in Missouri, where she was, it was a farm that had been in the family for generations, and she was raising horses, maybe cat, her son had the cattle. And so they were just, I mean, they were satisfied with what they had, was the sense I got.
And that is a good thing, I suppose that is.
When I lived in Maine from 68 to 70, it was amazing to me because we were an Air Force family and we had traveled from one end of the country to the other. And there were people that I went to school with that had never been further than 90 miles away to the big city, Ellsworth. And so when we went back a couple years ago and looked up a couple old friends, they still have never been anywhere other than, I think the furthest away has been Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
And you mean Portland, Maine.
Portland, Maine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and people that I remember in Canada somewhere, we had asked somebody for a question about something we'd find down the road, 50 miles down the road. And he said, I've never been there. He lived there, had never been down the road. I think as Alaskans, maybe you do find you kind of have to get down the road sometimes.
But in that part of Canada, you kind of have to get down the road also because there's no other way.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm going to backtrack a minute to a fight that they have, because this was the page that probably the only time I got mad at Philip. And so he's saying, you know, there was something about how they were doing the trailer and there was a problem with Ethel's hitch. And so it says, Ethel stared in silence, first at Ethel, then at me. Three marriages and a few relationships in between qualify me to make this observation about Homo sapiens femalis, subspecies Americanus. They are congenitally incapable of apologizing for a mistake because they're incapable of admitting they've made one. It's always the guy's fault. Number two son, Mark, married for a decade, has likewise noticed this trait and has revised the old riddle about the falling tree not making a sound. If a man were all alone in a forest with no woman there, would he still be wrong?
When I got to that part, which...
It is page 88, so...
Okay, when we got there, it hadn't led up to it. It caught me so unawares that I think I even stopped and, wait, let's listen to that again. I couldn't believe he was saying that and that I had understood it correctly. I was so taken aback, and I thought, wow. And then I found myself thinking, well, that, of course, sounds more like a man. And I thought, well, then I'm as bad as he is.
Well, and I think it is. I think in my dealings, it is harder for a man to say they're sorry. I don't agree with what he said.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree with a lot of times the man is wrong when he may not be, but quite often he is. But Franny's quick to apologize, and you know, I'm learning.
Yeah.
But it is hard to say you're
wrong.
Sorry or that you're wrong.
Right. And I think that goes for men and women. So you're right. And especially given, you know, he's kind of establishing here's the relationship that he has with his wife, and he's asked her along, and she's made all these accommodations with her work and everything to come with him. And she's been doing the dog wrangling. And then to say that, I don't know if she like had any say in editing of the book, but I would have said, come on.
Well, you know, and really? it didn't really seem like there was a buildup to that.
That's what I felt.
That, you know, it just kind of, wow, that's out of the blue.
Yep. And, well, he makes himself out to look like the good guy then. So he keeps his temper and devises a solution. Oh, and then he wants her to put in the blog. Okay, this is where she gets even, I think. Because then he says, I want you to say that, you know, that I'm your hero. And then it says, I knew that would be difficult, but I credit her for trying. This is what she wrote. Phil asks that I write, he's my hero. Here you go, Phil. I make a delicious spaghetti dinner to celebrate.
Well, and I don't think it did make him look like the good guy.
No, because there was places in there that he got angry.
Yeah, but I mean, even just making that statement, it just could have been totally left out of the book, as far as I think.
Yeah, because did he admit he was wrong when he drove down that road and then off his wife walks and he backs out and drives around to pick her up? No, yeah. I didn't hear him say, I had to apologize because I was wrong. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, that got me too.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes that can color, you know, how you read a book mm-hmm. once you get mad at the author.
Well, it was, like I said, it was so really out of context. It was almost like he's talking about traveling, and all of a sudden he throws in a thing about painting a room. Where does that come from? I mean, he didn't do that, but it's like...
It was kind of totally out there.
Just out of left field.
Mm-hmm. One thing I noticed was that, and maybe it was because we were on the Alcan, but he got across the country, diagonal across the country, right? Avoiding interstates. I like that a lot. Then he got up into the Pacific Northwest area, and he would not cross that border. I kept waiting. Come on. Come to where we are. We're up here. Come on. Almost, I thought he was stalling for a while, that he just did not go there. He just spent so much time in that area. Was that just because
And there's so much description of things. I thought he shortchanged the second half of the journey.
Did seem like, okay, we have to hurry up. But then again, I think we have to remember that he was supposed to be asking this question about what holds America together. So he had a long way to get through Canada.
Well, right. But, you know, I've made some trips recently to Guatemala, and they remind me that we are Americans.
Exactly. So, and I'm reminded of that, too, that this
Canada
is North and
is
Central America.
America.
Yes. And so, so
they're just not United States.
Right. So I think his question is really what holds the United States together.
Correct.
Right. But he's saying he's 70. He doesn't know that. That's not the right thing to say anymore. But anyway, you're right. I think, you know, the whole trip through Canada is very, you know, quick. I think the one thing that they say, and I thought this was true, too, is he talks about we are glutted on scenery, dazed by it. I mean, every time you turn a corner, beautiful, a bear. And then a bear. Yeah. Look at more scenery.
More bison.
More pretty.
More bison. But just stunningly beautiful. And I'm reminded every time I drive that Alcan that it is just magnificent. And then, of course, the Alaskan part. We're super interested in that because this is our home, of course. I've never been to Chicken. Would love to go to Chicken.
Mm-hmm.
I guess now I will go to Chicken. Weren't there some good cinnamon rolls there, too? Wasn't that on the list?
The restaurant, I can't remember. She made pies. I can't remember if there were cinnamon rolls. But, that sounds like some characters there in Chicken.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And then, of course, the...
Wonder if they served chicken.
They said they had to, remember? Like, because he went to 2 Egg, and they had no eggs.
Yeah, right.
So he wanted to go
right.
to Chicken
right.
and have chicken.
Okay.
Yeah. And which came first, Chicken or 2 Egg?
Well, and then he described Leslie sitting next to him with the milepost on her lap. And, of course, I look down. I'm sitting there with the milepost on my lap.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, yes, this is what we all do when we're traveling, you know, Alaska and so forth. And but here's what it's not that easy to follow the milepost sometimes, especially if you're going opposite the way it was written.
Yeah.
Especially if it's 10 years old.
Yeah, and mine was 10 years old. But I had my finger in the place where the map is. Then you have your finger in where the description is. But then I had a third finger in the place he was at. So
you were working.
I was working. Because every time they would describe something on that Dalton Highway, I was, you know, I'm going to read it. The church and then the fishing holes and then where he had to just leave the Airstream and then drive the rest of the way. Because I was super interested in that. And I followed right along.
And when we travel, we travel with 2 GPSs on the dash for different purposes. But Franny always has a map out.
I like the big picture, too.
I want to know where I am in the scheme of things. And you do not get that.
On a GPS.
No.
So why do you have 2 GPS?
One does some things that the other one doesn't do.
Okay.
And also, if we're trying to find something, we can leave one on that. So I'm following it. And Franny can be searching for something on the other one.
Okay.
Right. The nearest
that makes sense.
A campground or
coffee place. That makes sense. So another thing that I guess kind of bothered me, and I like this book, but there's things that bothered me. So as he's traveling, and this is when he's in like the Midwest and Pine Ridge, especially, and he asks the question, why would anyone live here? And then he's other places where he kind of gets it, where, you know, he talks about the connectedness people have to land and understanding that this is, you know, either where their generations of the family lived and survived, or this is where our food comes from, or this is our livelihood. But there was times where it seemed like he got it and sometimes where it seemed like he didn't.
I agree with you. But I think that we all have those things. I mean, there are places that we travel to where I think, oh, you know, if I had to pick another place to live, this might be it, you know, just.
And then there's places that I've looked at and I ask myself that question. Why would somebody stay here? Why would somebody live here?
And so it's not really a fair question without knowing anything more about the place, right? But I think we all ask it.
Yeah. So you're listening to Radio Book Club. We're talking about The Longest Trip or The Longest Road. It became The Longest Trip by Philip Caputo. And this is Radio Free Palmer. So, and I might say to myself, I wouldn't want to live here because I travel to a lot of villages and I don't think I could live that way. But I never say, how could anyone live here? I think that that shows kind of an egotism that, you know, he wouldn't want to live there. But that doesn't mean other people aren't trying to survive or they have connections to that place.
I think more, I kind of misstated mine. More what I think a lot of times is, what do they do here? I mean, how do you survive in a place like this?
Yeah. And I think that's a fair question because that comes from more like I'm trying to understand or comprehend what does, you know, life look like for you?
Well, every place that we've been in the motorhome, we've been in almost every state. But without the motorhome, I've been in every state in the United States. And there's something interesting and beautiful in every single state that I've been in. The one that surprised me the most, I don't know why, was Arkansas. Hmm. I was not expecting much out of Arkansas.
Isn't it funny how we'll have kind of preconceived
ideas? Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking, but it was beautiful, the section that we went to.
Yeah.
It was. I had the same, where do you get that stuff?
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And then you're, of course, delighted and surprised and happy when you find those beautiful things. And I think growing up in Alaska, it's impressed upon you how unique and beautiful the place you come from is. And it is. I'm not taking away from that. But you could maybe start to think, well, so many people mention it. The rest of the states must not be that beautiful.
Well, the cornfields in Kansas, you know, they're beautiful. But after a while, they get kind of monotonous.
Yeah. But it's like what we said, though, coming up through British Columbia or the Yukon. I mean, the glory of whatever, we get desensitized to it by seeing so much of it. And I mean, even in Alaska, sometimes I have to say to myself, oh, remember what a beautiful place you live in. Because you can't just every second, every minute of the day go, oh, so beautiful. This is
well,
so
pretty. We'll spot a bald eagle. Oh, there's a bald eagle. But when we go to Homer, Franny will finally say, all right, no more bald eagles.
We don't have to point out each single one. are still entranced by a moose walking through our yard.
Mm-hmm.
We still love that.
I think that's a trait that, you know, some people have, that to recognize the beauty in so many things. And I think he does see that sometimes. And it comes at the end when he talks about just how the ancientness of nature. And so he's talking about being somewhere and he's looking at some tree and he's thinking about that was probably a seedling when Columbus landed. And you know, so this idea that no matter, you know, what we do or how long we're here, you know, it's nature and this beauty that will continue.
And on that particular point, I agreed with him because I find myself thinking that a lot about the things we see, you know, the mountains, you know, you're mentioning the trees. I think of how it has withstood time and what other people, even to the point of other people that have come by here, what they might have been wearing if it was 200 years ago or, you know, I don't know. I just, I let my imagination kind of go with that kind of thinking.
Right. Especially if you're like at a historical site, because the other thing that bothered me is when he says Astoria is the longest continuously inhabited city west of the Mississippi. And I'm thinking, no, I heard some other city was. What was it? So I looked it up because it was Acoma Pueblo in New Mexico. So I went back just to make sure he didn't say Western civilized or anything like that. But it was... you know, it's not Astoria, which was established in the 1800s. It's Acoma Pueblo, 1000 AD. But so when I would go to those places, and then you think about how the Pueblo Indians lived in that environment. And so kind of like what you're saying, you know, just trying to imagine what was it like and how was it, you know, how did it look different at that time and how did they survive? And yeah.
And has the Pueblo been occupied that whole time?
Yes. Yeah. And it's on top of a mesa. So it's just a fascinating place.
Well, we spent time recently in the oldest continuously inhabited city in the United States. And that was St. Augustine.
Okay, because he does say west of the Mississippi
You know, and then going to Europe with Franny so many times, and you think, really?
Yeah,
we're, I know. We're going to brag about 300 or 400 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still an interesting place.
It is.
And reminiscent a little bit of Europe, some of the things. Yeah, I let my imagination go with that. And I think sometimes that is part of the nice thing about traveling the way we do is you do get a chance to reflect on a lot of that. You know, we see people, believe it or not, we see a lot of crazy things, but some RVs have TVs mounted to the outside of them so that you can sit outside in the evening and watch TV on the side of your RV. When we first bought ours, it came with a TV, and we bought another little TV in the bedroom, and we never watch TV.
Franny will watch a movie every once in a while, and I don't do it.
It does not come up.
Uh-huh.
And you'd rather just sit there, you know, and look out at the beautiful scenery. And I remember one day in particular, one of my quests was to see a roadrunner. I'd never seen a roadrunner in all our travels, and I thought it sounded like the most interesting bird. And one morning, I think I'm making the bed or doing something, and Bruce said, "Franny, look out at the front window. No, look out at the dinette window. No, look out at the back window. No, look out at the side window."
And Roadrunner is an accurate name.
I didn't know.
They're pretty quick.
I was running all around that thing, and we saw our first roadrunners. I was just delighted. You know, and I'm not against TV. I watch TV at home, but it's a whole other different experience out there on
Wake
the road.
Up in a park in Utah and open the back curtain and there's 16 deer right behind our camper.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't occur to you to put on the news, deer. Let's see what's on.
It's a relief to be away from that.
Yeah. So and that kind of brings up that other piece that I think maybe some people are reluctant travelers. It's almost like they want all the comforts of home and do everything that they do at home, but now they just happen to be on wheels.
And I think that once you are able to be in a situation where you have to or can give up some of that stuff, you realize how unimportant it really is.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of these people, that is their home.
True. Well, that's true.
They have sold their brick and mortar home and sunk it all into this RV, and they live in these parks. They may not move for a month.
Yeah.
We rarely stay more than one night. Sometimes we only travel 100 miles. Sometimes we travel a couple hundred miles. But most times, unless there's something really intriguing in an area, we'll stop, but we don't pull a car behind us. If we're going to stay in a place for any length of time, we'll go rent a car.
Yeah.
Leave our camper parked.
And, you know, one thing that we did also notice, and I'm trying not to judge people with their TVs and so forth, and especially, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, it's probably still that way, but we would go to some RV parks, and it was obvious some people were actually just living there out of necessity.
Oh, okay.
They had a rundown camper of some kind, and they in the morning, they'd put the kids in the car and they'd take them to school. And so you see that too. And so,
yeah, there's a spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have a brother-in-law who does trap shooting meets. And so he and his wife travel to these different meets. And so we went down to see them and down by Tucson one time where they were camped. And so this is one of those sports that people invest a lot of money in, thousands and thousands of dollars in their guns, thousands of dollars to travel from meet to meet. And then motorhomes that are in the $2 million range. So I don't know if when you've been traveling, if you've gotten yourself invited into any of those kinds of deluxe mansions, but
we've seen some, but we, I don't know that we've been invited into any really super fancy ones.
Well, you know, we, this whole thing kind of started on different footing, separate footing, because I had always had in my mind thought, that does sound fun. Let's do that, Bruce, and let's get one of those little love vans. Those little, you know, cram everything into it, just a little. And his idea was, no, let's bigger. Get one of those really super big, you know. So I feel like we kind of compromised on that. And, you know, I'm kind of glad, because in the long run, that would be rough to be in those little things.
That would not be a love van for very long.
But love, you're getting on my nerves. Yeah,
those super big ones, though, I mean, they all have their problems. And when you see some of them trying to just navigate around a little area, you think, oh, that's
well, you see
just
some
to
of those.
Gas.
Yeah. Some of those rigs have, it's a 40-foot bus.
Mm-hmm.
And another 15 or 20 foot trailer behind it.
Oh, yeah. Then they're pulling more money. So we just have a couple minutes left. So anything else you want to say about the Alaska portion of the trip? Because you're right. I mean, it for Alaskans, that was kind of fascinating. And
I'm wondering where he found, what did he say, $7 or $8 gas. I've never come across that in Alaska, but I've never lived in a village. But he wasn't in a village. He was on the road system.
He had to have been north of Fairbanks by that time, right?
I don't know.
I don't know about that.
I don't think he was. Hmm. I don't think he was on the Dalton yet.
Okay.
But it just seemed
like he may have been exaggerating.
The one oddity.
Yeah.
What I want to say about Alaska and the reaction that my son, who was, you know, part of our caravan, had as he was listening to this, and the man describing Alaska as my son's in a vehicle moving out of Alaska.
Yeah.
He's lived here all his life.
Yeah.
He, first of all, he said he had intense pride listening.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had to remember, wait, I'm leaving. And it made him sad.
Mm-hmm.
It made him sad.
Uh-oh. But he didn't turn around.
No. I mean, he's on to a new chapter and he'll probably, you know, be back someday. But that was his reaction.
That's interesting. Yeah. So you said you've never driven the Dalton. Do you think you will?
I go to these auctions sometimes where they have.
She's pretty tight with our money, but she bid pretty high on one of these auctions.
I just want to do it.
So what's the auction? What do you mean?
Well, you know, sometimes you go to these fundraising auctions and somebody will have one of the silent auction and you can sign up for, you know, hey, we'll drive you up that road.
Oh,
and, you know, and I'm like, yes,
so
I'll
what,
pay $3,000 for that. There's a fear issue for me.
Oh, so you don't want to do it in a private vehicle.
Well,
you would want to go with like one of the truckers?
I would do it in a private vehicle, but you can't rent a vehicle in Fairbanks without them saying you cannot take it on this highway.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about renting one in Anchorage.
So, yeah, I want to do that. I think I'm going to do that.
So, but is it a trucker that will take you, or how do you?
I think in that particular one, they do have tours that will actually take you, and they'll tell you where they'll stop with
you. And they
you
fly and you back home.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But that one, I think that one might have been with a trucker.
It might have been. I'll go.
It's a rough road.
Well, it sounded rough, but they did it, and the motorcycle cyclists went.
Right.
Well, one of them died.
Yeah, and he made kind of like short shift of that, didn't he? One died. Yeah. He didn't really tell us. But it does sound a little bit frightening. I mean, you know, there's no guardrails and the drop-offs. And again, I wonder if in 4 years how much it's improved. Just because you think about how much time those long-haul truckers
are on the road. It's probably better than I think it is in my mind. And this book helped.
Helped you want to go?
It helped me want to go and make me think, hey, this is doable. Airstream's out there.
There you go.
I can do it.
So is this a book you'd recommend to people? I mean, you had other people read
it.
Well,
we did.
Yeah, you did.
And then I passed
and then we
it
brought
over
it home and gave it to her sister.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't love it, but there were a lot of parts of it that I could really relate to and that were very interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we'd have a lot to talk about. We didn't get to everything. So I wanted to thank Frank, Franny and Bruce for joining me today as we discussed Philip Caputo's book, The Longest Road. Please join me on July 27th at noon when we discuss This Dark Road to Mercy by Wiley Cash. 12-year-old Easter Quilby's earliest memory of her father was watching him from a distance play baseball. When she was 9, Wade Chesterfield, she calls him Wade, not Dad, abandoned Easter, her younger sister Ruby, and their mom Corinne. 3 years later, when Corinne dies from a drug overdose, the girls are placed in a foster home. But Wade, who had forfeited parental rights, soon reappears in town to steal back his daughters. It's fitting that the ex-minor leaguer finds him on a softball diamond. Cash won the Edgar Award for Best Novel for this book. My guests will be Debbie Fox and Marianne Cockle. So thanks again for joining me.
Thanks for inviting us.
I want to remind listeners that 89.5 is a community radio station that relies on support from listeners like you. So please take the time to visit our website, radiofreepalmer.org, and become a contributing or a sustaining member. This is Judy Getty with Radio Book Club. Happy reading.